Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 17th of December, recording at 5 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. This being Friday, this is my big picture long-term outlook, covering the various different asset classes. First, global stock markets. Now, following my piece yesterday in Comment of the Day on secular bear markets and the probability that Wall Street is in a secular bear market, I won't dwell too much on that factor here at this stage, but it is my suspicion. But more importantly, we are still within a medium-term rally for global stock markets. I see no evidence that it's over, although inevitably we see pauses and consolidations, and indeed we have seen some profit-taking here today in Europe and North America, but Asia saw some quite good gains in here, not least in Japan with the Nikkei up 1.41%. It's really Nikkei's had the best week here for some time, and my goodness, even the Tokyo Second Section Index, by which I place great store, regarding it as a lead indicator, has been up the last couple of days in a row, albeit modestly. But the important factor here is to emphasize is that I see no evidence yet that this current stock market rally is over. And therefore, what I've repeatedly described as my best case scenario ever since getting back from holiday and assessing in the very end of August and assessing the upward dynamics from mid-August, the good technical action that was unfolding, my best case scenario has been that this rally would carry well into the first quarter of 2005. As I said a moment ago, that still seems to be in with a good chance of occurring. Now, what might cause that rally to end thereafter? And we, I think, already know the factors, or of known factors, I'll put it this way, it would be a recovery by the oil price. And I maintain that crude oil saw a medium-term bottom at near the $40 level. And the other factor, and potentially the more serious one, would be unless oil rallied upwards very sharply, which I do not expect, although in a secular bull market, I would, if it did anything really dramatic from here, I would think it would be more likely to be on the upside above 40 rather than, say, below 40, which some people are calling for. But the other factor, which could well end the medium-term, what I'm continuing to describe as a medium-term rally in global stock markets, would be, let's take the time horizon. Really, this rally got underway in March of 2003, and it was predictable back then, and we had a very good run, and then we had quite a lengthy pause and consolidation of those gains, which really started early on in the first quarter for some of the lead markets, and some of the other markets that had been lagging on the way up didn't peak until the second quarter, and were then soft for much of the third quarter of this year until, say, those mid-August lows before moving up strongly again. And inevitably, they don't all go at the same time. Some of the emerging markets, particularly in Eastern Europe and South America, had led the upturns that occurred in the developed markets from the mid-August lows. But to put this in context, if we go right back to, say, those March lows of last year, we're talking about a move that by the end of February, or into by the end of February, would be 2 years old. And that's getting long in the tooth for rallies within secular bear markets. But nevertheless, there has to be something to end it. Now, I've mentioned only one factor, which would be another spike upwards And what do I mean by spike upwards, going back and testing the high on crude oil at the $55 level? I certainly expect that to happen at some time. If it happens sooner rather than later, I'm more inclined to later, but if it happens sooner, then that would certainly create a very, very strong headwind for the stock market rally. The other factor, which I think is an equal, if not greater, threat to the rally as we go into 2005, will be upward pressure on U.S. interest rates. Now, this is one of those cases where good news is bad news, in the sense that the good news is that the U.S. economy is doing better than many people had actually expected. And okay, I know that there are those who say, yeah, the figures aren't as good as they claim to be, and I accept that, but they're better than the pessimists, let alone the many doomsters, have actually been saying. And I have mentioned for the last several years that the seeds of a new inflationary cycle had already been sown by Federal Reserve policies, and we have seen little outbreaks of pressure on the inflationary front. And I'm sure that it's not just in the United States. I'm sure that my many subscribers in Australia and New Zealand and in the Asian region will also be seeing these inflationary pressures. Certainly, if you pay the household bills, you'll be well aware of them. Now, what is not the case, of course, is that inflation is not part of the public consciousness, and therefore we're not getting a serious wage inflation problem. But these things follow sequentially, and we certainly are in the earlier stages of a new inflationary cycle. And if the U.S. growth comes in, say, better than many had expected, that will certainly cause the Federal Reserve to push rates up higher than, say, was being forecast only a month or two ago, in an effort to head off those early inflationary pressures. And they would have some success in doing that, although they would certainly not halt, say, what is the early stages of a new inflationary cycle, which in my view will last 10 to 15 years or more. But they would certainly dampen down inflationary pressures temporarily. And a consequence of that would almost inevitably be weaker stock markets. And I'm of the view that we haven't seen the bear market lows for the Dow, the S&P 500 index, or the Nasdaq, although the actual final low may not be numerically all that much below the lows that we saw in October 2002, which were just a little bit lower than the lows that we saw in March 2003 that I was referring to a moment ago. So, in addition to the prospect of a rising oil price creating a headwind for the global stock market rally, there's the prospect of higher U.S. interest rates. And as I've said so many times, rising short-term interest rates have killed off more bull market rallies than anything else known to mankind. Now, there's a third factor which may or may not be a risk, and that would be if the dollar's slide not only continued but accelerated relative to the rather gradual but steady decline that we had seen up until just over a week ago, when we started to get a dollar bounce from a short-term oversold condition. I think that's the least of the threats at this stage. I think the more serious ones, as I say, are the potential for an oil price rise and interest rate rise. But those factors are not sufficiently influential, sufficiently in the public consciousness, investor consciousness today, in my view, to cause more than some profit taking. For instance, oil today is up $1.77 as I speak. Wall Street's down 57 on the Dow, 10, 9 rather, on the S&P. So there certainly is a relationship, but I have little doubt that the Dow would be up at least 57 if oil was back on $40, but instead it's near 46. So this is always an influence in here, but will it be enough of an influence to actually check the rally? Well, not at these levels. It would have to rise quite a bit more. So therefore, I feel this rally, this very good recovery from that March 2003 low is still intact, albeit getting long in the tooth. Now, if we get lucky, and we often do get lucky in markets, they overshoot, we get a good push that carries some stock markets up in another sort of burst of euphoria, sort of year end and in January, and so on. But if we do see that, I think it would be prudent to start taking some money off the table out of the market. In other words, now what if I'm completely wrong about that, and as the optimists hope, and heck, I'm an optimist, or I think of myself as an optimist. But let's talk about the people who are saying that the new bull market may have begun, and its market will go up throughout 2005, whether it's the decennial effect or whatever, GDP growth or whatever factors they cite. Could they be right? And as I said yesterday, yes, in theory, any possibility is in with a chance. And the best way to monitor that is, of course, on the charts. If there's enough liquidity sloshing around in the system and interest rates don't go up too quickly, then yes, the rally can carry further. But let's deal with that when we get there, if we get there. In terms of a rally that is extending beyond the first quarter of 2005. Meanwhile, I'm still happy to maintain a good long book. Now, other interesting factors is China's growth and demand. A number of people have been predicting a hard landing for China. I have respect the arguments and listen to them all, and I'm no expert on China, but it would seem to me that the last thing the Chinese authorities would want to create would be a hard landing. They'd be more aware of the risks and consequences for themselves if that were to occur, and so would try to prevent it at almost any cost. And therefore, it doesn't seem to me to be beyond the wit or wisdom of people in that country to head off a hard landing and rather create the soft landing. Wring some of the speculative excesses out of the system, but basically maintain what are broadly stimulative policies. And Christopher Wood's report today that I posted deals with that theme, and the other report that I put up from HSBC I think has struck me as reasonably optimistic, although I didn't have a chance to read it really thoroughly. But the bottom line comment is that if they are right, particularly the Christopher Wood comment, then it's much too soon to be writing off the supply inelasticity markets, and oil included. And but I'm talking about the metals, and these would be both industrial metals and gold. So I am still favorably inclined towards those markets, whether you play them in the actual metals themselves, this is my preference, or play them in the shares that are involved in producing the metals and other commodities. Now, on the very long-term basis, I maintain that emerging markets will do best by far. Overall, I like the Asian ones, but I also like the Eastern European ones, and then from time to time, the South American, Central and South American commodity producers will have some spectacular gains. The big risks for them will occur when Wall Street has clearly topped out, and those emerging markets are a high beta more often than not, and could easily lead on the downside. As you probably know, I'm not too thrilled with communist stock markets, and I've written about that this week. I don't need to go into that any further here. Now, moving on to the global bond markets, I've maintained that the secular bull market ended in June of last year, and that a secular bear market is underway, but is in a lengthy top development type 3 top as taught at the chart seminars phase. And I've been looking particularly at the US Treasury bonds, and I've had a policy in the last couple of years of selling those short on rallies and covering on the setbacks. And recently in the US 30-year Treasuries, I'd been adding to short positions on the rally. It wasn't looking terribly clever until yesterday when we got a downward dynamic, creating an upside failure for the US 30-year bond futures. And we're getting some downside follow through in here today with a loss trading at 112.07 on the March contract, down 12.30 seconds. So my feeling is that the bonds will move back down and test the lower side of the range in the 110.109 area at least. But I do maintain that the big money in government bonds will be made over the next 10 to 15 years by the people who time their short sale entries. I think they will do better than the people who time their buy entries, let alone the people who have any buy and hold policy in these markets. Too much supply floating around, too much liquidity creating future inflationary problems, and the yields are not attractive in my book. So I think that we can look for long-term yields rising over time, not in any one straight line, of course, but in rolling waves. And I think we're going to see this occur for the U.S. Treasuries and JGBs in particular, but that will also have a big influence on, say, UK gilts and the euro bunds. And yesterday's upside failure on the T-bond has certainly crimped the rally in bunds. But long-term prognosis is that I don't think those government bonds are good value. Corporate bonds, high-quality corporate bonds with a decent yield, and there'll always be a demand for that. And Mark Lowry, a colleague of mine who many of you know or know of, feels that at some point in the next few years that AAA corporate debt will yield less than 30-year treasury bonds, and that wouldn't surprise me in the least, although I hadn't thought of it until Mark Lowry pointed out that possibility. So he gets all the credit if it turns out to be right. Now, in terms of currency markets, we don't get the big secular once-a-generational long moves, as I mentioned before, but we do get some pretty persistent trends that can run anything from 2 to 5, even 7 years in these currencies. And I'm very much of the view that we have not seen the final lows for the US dollar, but I'm equally strongly an advocate of the view that there will be no collapse of the US dollar because of the consequences that that would have for all other countries. I mean, to tip the world into a global steep global recession, if not depression. So other countries, central banks and finance ministries will be jawboning, they will be intervening, and especially they will be printing more money. I said that we are in the early stages of early years of a new inflationary cycle, but central banks and finance ministries will go on fighting the last war against deflationary pressures for many years as we move into this new inflationary cycle, and only tightening occasionally, as we see. It's just the way that as we had moved well into the disinflationary cycle, central banks back in the 1980s, from the latter half of the 1980s and early 1990s, were continuing to fight inflationary pressures, the lost war, in other words. So I think that's what we will see. There'll be plenty of liquidity around. It'll mean that the secular bear market that I've talked about on Wall Street will resemble more of a 1967 to 1982, if those are the parameters that you use. Again, that was discussed in that item yesterday. It'll look more like that than like the Japanese secular bear market from 1990s onwards, let alone U.S. in the following the crash of 29. And both of those more extreme examples occurred because of severe monetary blunders, and I don't think we're going to see anything like that. Okay, and moving on to well, so where does that leave us? So we're still, as far as the U.S. dollar is concerned, in a stage where we cannot say, I cannot say conclusively that the rally is over, but I think that this is mostly a sort of a short covering, temporary, short-term rally, that it isn't going to be all that big. So I would rather be buying the currencies, particularly currencies that yield more than the dollar, such as the Australian dollar. I would be preferring to buy the Aussie against the US, say, on easing, than shorting any of those when the dollar looks oversold and is beginning to steady. Now, moving on to these supply and elasticity markets, I've pretty much covered them in a comment today on oil, again saying that I think we've probably seen this medium-term low near the $40 level. But read the Merrill Lynch comments, which posted by Bloomberg, which are on the site. I'm actually recording before the website's been updated, but the site will be up shortly. And I think that the evidence of emerging from China suggests that, and the United States economy suggests that demand for the metals will continue to be quite robust. So I think there are further opportunities there, and I'm happy to play with moderate-sized long positions. I don't want to be too aggressive at this particular stage of the cycle, and given the sort of choppy nature of the chart action that we're seeing. In terms of soft commodities, such as the soybeans and corn, I'm wrapping my knuckles here. I'm on the desk. I missed another little baby steps opportunity in the soybeans, I think, which I know are down 6 today, but they show type 3 base activity. These grains and beans are dirt cheap, and again, showing evidence of type 3 base development. That makes them baby steps, buy low, lighten on the rallies, type of tactics if you participate in that particular area, and I do, and it's worth doing, I believe, provided one does it on the baby steps basis. But we may not see any big action for until we're into the U.S. Growing season next spring in America. So I think that's pretty much it at that stage. So I'll just say, have an excellent weekend, and mention that the comment of the day is slightly shorter than it usually is because of other commitments that I've had, including a long board meeting here today. But there'll be plenty of more copy, of course, and analysis next week. All the best.